no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
All righty, let's get back at it. We're live here. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on YouTube.com. We're also available basically anywhere you want to find us. You can always subscribe to the podcast. Hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button on the podcast. We'll be sure to get your program just as soon as possible.
Gentlemen, my friend Adam right now is texting me. He's in Montreal. And I think he's a little bit surprised. He hasn't probably seen me in, I don't know, well over a year. And he probably thinks it's Grizzly Adams here on the screen. But it's nice to see a lot of people here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and, you know, across the country and elsewhere tuning into the show. Something new for us. You know, I think most people would probably prefer not to see us. maybe except for Dave's handsome mug. For Drew and I think, you know, we have faces for radio, but it's awesome, to hear and read all of these people that are tuning in right now.
No question. Somebody on the YouTube chat is saying that Dave looks like Dylan DeMello, which is, I think, where the similarities might begin and end. I've seen Dave play hockey, and Dave never made it past the red line, not once that I ever see Dave with a hard back check whatsoever. So Dave was definitely the definition. He was always leaking out for that breakaway pass, not so much the breakaway speed, but the breakaway pass nonetheless. Impressions, early impressions. It's only been two games. Early impressions of Pierre-Luc Dubois from both of your perspectives. I mean, we know that it's obviously there's a long runway to get up to speed for him, given the lengthy quarantine, given the time off the ice. We see Jack Roslovic absolutely ripping it up with the Columbus Blue Jackets so far. And for better or worse, Dubois is always going to be compared or looked at, what Laine is doing in Columbus and what Roslovic's doing in Columbus. So far, I guess your early impressions of Pierre-Luc Dubois, through a couple games here for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's pretty obvious, guys, that, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois has been, you know, a little bit rusty in his first few games. And, you know, we expected that. And, you know, I like that Dubois is playing with Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler. Like, I like, you know, the idea of that line. Has it, you know, worked out, you know, through two games? Well, I wouldn't say that, you know, they're generating the type of offense that you would like to see, but I think that's to be expected. And so the first two games are a work in progress. I don't think there's any other way to say it. I mean, the line, And Dubois specifically, you know, I think, you know, he's been okay. I don't think that, you know, you can say that he's been bad or anything like that. Maybe on Tuesday night against the Flames, you know, in the first couple periods, you could say that, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois was really just trying to find his skating legs. And that's the thing, right? Like, Dubois only had, what was it, two practices before Tuesday night's game, right? So when you're off the ice for two plus weeks, you know, two practices to get right back into an NHL regular season game isn't a lot. So, I just don't think that you should make too much out of a couple of games. And, you know, he had more ice time on Thursday night. I think he was, you know, over 17 minutes. And, you know, you expect a guy like Dubois to be out there for 17 to 20 minutes. But I just, Dave, don't think that you can really read too much into his play, considering we have never seen a situation like this, guys, where a player is traded and then has to sit in a house, or I don't know if he was in a house or condo, for 2 weeks. So you have to give him the benefit of the doubt here. And, you know, he left practice yesterday, so we're not sure if he's going to play this afternoon. But regardless if he plays this afternoon or next week, he's only going to be better. Pierre-Luc Dubois is an excellent centerman. So, yes, has he been a little bit rusty? Sure. But show me a player that, you know, has to quarantine for 2 weeks in the middle of a regular season and isn't rusty. That's what I would say to that.
Dave, what are your thoughts on Dubois so far?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Ez. I'm not entirely surprised that it's taken him a little bit of time to get going. It's almost as if he's starting his season anew, right? And then it's almost like these games for him are essentially like a training camp style of game, because he had such a long pause between when he last played with Columbus and when he got his first game in with the Jets, and to Ezzy's point, only a few practices. And he was at a house, and he was, you know, the Jets had provided him with fitness equipment, but I mean, there's only so much that can do for a player who's used to playing regularly. And then, of course, it's instead now waiting in the wings, waiting for the opportunity to play. I'm not particularly concerned. I think that, you know, you can see what kind of player he is. You can see the thinking that he does on the ice. You can see the size that he brings. You can see the smarts. So to me, Pierre-Luc Dubois is a player who I think long-term, like by long-term, I mean long-term in the season, is going to fit really well into this Jets system. I think he'll really provide them with a boost. I think, you know, I wouldn't even consider judging him based on these few games simply because it's almost irrelevant, I think, based on what you're going to see from the type of player by my estimation, probably by next week. I'm not saying he couldn't have a great game today if he ends up playing. Again, Paul Maurice said yesterday that he was probable, something tightened up. So we're not entirely certain, and there won't be a morning skate. So we won't really know till 1:30 when the Jets have their warm-up skate, really what the lines are and whether Pierre-Luc Dubois is out there skating.
So information will be available, of course, on illegalcurve.com because I'm your company man.
That's right. So, and that's true. You can read the pregame report, although because we're so busy and because this is live and because I don't have a commercial break, my pregame report might have to wait till after, because usually I'm doing that when the show is on and you guys aren't watching me and knowing that I'm busting away to kind of do something while these two bozos are talking. But I think the truth is that, again, to me, when you see what Pierre-Luc Dubois can bring to this organization, I'm not entirely concerned. Now, if you want to talk, like, I mean, a lot of people in the chat right now are talking about Jack Roslick.
Yeah.
I was always a Jack Roslick booster. I always was, to me, I didn't think that he was given the opportunity. Now, I haven't watched the games. I haven't watched his games in Columbus. You know, it's very hard to, when you're doing that, when you're focused on the Jets and the Moose here in Winnipeg, if you watch games in Columbus. So admittedly, I don't know. I mean, obviously from a points perspective, he's doing quite well, but I've read some comments that people have said he's been opportunistic and that away from the puck, he hasn't looked fantastic. He's looked a little loose. So we'll see how that ends up working out. I think Jack Roslick, personally, my opinion on that was that he was kind of given away. But again, I wouldn't.
Let me stop you right there. I mean, sure. You know, admittedly, you know, we haven't looked at it very closely, but it seems like Jack Roslick, right now it would seem like, you know, the way Jack Roslovic is performing is a damnation of how Paul Maurice used him.
Yeah. And again, like I said, that's been my, like, when I would watch others do nothing, but when I would watch Jack Roslovic play with the Manitoba Moose, you know, I saw a player who was probably, when he was playing in his last year with Manitoba, was the most dominant player with the Moose in the AHL. Sorry, not just with the Moose, but in the AHL. And then you have a player who goes up with the Jets and he's not really given an opportunity. But I'll end that so you can bring in James Dudley.
We'll keep talking. We'll talk more about Roslovic, Dubois, and Line A a little bit later on in the program. We are pleased to now welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show James Duffy of TSN. James, good morning. Thanks so much for doing this. And before we have you on, I just got to say on behalf of myself, and I'm sure I can speak for Ezzy and Dave, when you reached out to us earlier this week, in light of all the news with what happened here in Winnipeg and in Vancouver and Hamilton, that demonstrated the level of class that you don't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis nowadays. And, you know, we really appreciated it. It was a testament to your character to reach out to us, because frankly, we don't really know each other. Maybe we've interacted, you know, once or twice over the years, but to pick up the phone and cold call us was very classy and appreciated.
Well, first of all, hi, Dave, Ezra, and Drew. Thanks for having me. Thank you for that. I mean, it feels weird getting thank yous for something that is just, to me, human decency, right? And I said this to you guys then, and I mean it. Like, TSN, as hokey as it sounds, is a family. And there's all these little spokes in the wheel, right? There's SportsCenter's a big spoke in the wheel, and the TSN hockey part of it, and CFL on TSN, and radio's a big part of it, and Winnipeg's we love Winnipeg. Winnipeg's a massive market. Winnipeg radio was critical in everything that you guys do to get people talking about Jets hockey, and Jets hockey is a big part of TSN. So everything matters and everybody matters. And if nothing else, I think you guys should have known that, but I wanted to pop that into your heads that, you know, the Dan O'Toole's and Natasha Staniszewski's and Brent Wallace and Christian Jackson, those kind of names, and even Hustler in your town get the headlines when something happens like this. But Dave and Ezra and Drew and guys like Michael, your producer, and Chris Curry, and all those guys that work behind the scenes at the station are as important as Dan or Natasha or anybody else was to everything that TSN does. So I hope you guys are doing good, and I'm glad the show is still going.
Absolutely. You know, hiccups, as I said to Hustler about, 10 or so minutes ago, challenges just mean opportunities. So we're going to take advantage of this opportunity. And obviously we appreciate your time this morning, James. I got to ask you, I know from our perspective, obviously the Jets are our first and foremost focus. And then after that, everything else is secondary. But Is it as bizarre to you as it is to me that there's basically an entire three other divisions in the NHL that, as far as I know, I'm not paying any attention to? I mean, I it seems like most of the teams are currently on COVID lockdown anyways, but it just seems like with the Canadian division, what's happening south of the border almost doesn't matter this year.
O-Dog, has O-Dog been on? He's coming on today too, right? Or has he already been on?
In about 30 minutes, O-Dog's going to join us.
Okay, so O-Dog and I were talking about this the other day, that it's like the rest of the league is the KHL in the equivalent of a normal season. And you knew this was going to happen. And I think the Canadian division has been great, and it's a really cool deal. But I do feel, even coming on with you guys, I'm sort of a generalist, right? Where I have to know a little bit about every team. Whenever I come on, when you guys are just know every single detail, I always feel like I'm going to look stupid because I'm going to forget the seventh defenseman with the most or something. But I was doing one in Philly the other day, a podcast like this. And I came on going, man, I haven't even thought about the Flyers this year. And I'm going to talk about the Flyers for a half an hour. So yeah, it's a really weird, weird world right now. And particularly all the troubles that have gone on in those divisions with COVID. And for the most part, Edmonton had Puljujärvi had a positive or an inconclusive test or something the other day, but that was the first time it's even touched the Canadian division. And that's a story that's going to develop as the year goes on. If Canada continue to go along, are we going to have a situation where the Canadian teams play the 56 game sked and the rest of the league is 45 or something, which will be really interesting come playoff time? But sorry, that's a long-winded way of saying, yes, it's bizarre. Sorry, I got a green smoothie today. So if I get green in my teeth, please tell me. My wife just made this for me.
We got coffee. So we got caught between green smoothie and coffee stains. I think we're covering all the bases in terms of things you don't necessarily want on your teeth in a YouTube broadcast.
Exactly.
And James, we want to ask you about kind of your perspective on the Jets in Toronto as well. But, we got to ask you about the Maple Leafs, 4 wins in a row. They've only lost 2 games this year at 11-2-1. And, Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews have combined 37 points, which is just really ridiculous. But, I mean, when you look at this division right now, and, yeah, the Montreal Canadiens have, had a few hiccups lately. And, you've got the Jets right behind the Canadiens. But, for you, when you look at, Vancouver struggling, and obviously, you don't want to, kick a dead horse in the Ottawa Senators, but we've already done that quite a bit this morning, but they're really struggling. But is this for you like Toronto's division to lose? Because you look at the way the Leafs are playing, and on certain nights it doesn't even look like they're playing that well, but they're still getting these victories, and they've really separated themselves from the rest of the pack.
Well, as you know, on TSN we don't like to focus on the Leafs. We prefer to let them be like yeah, they're good. They are really good. But I wonder if it matters. I don't think it matters until the playoffs, and which is not fair to say. They deserve the credit they're getting. They look like a different team. I think the difference in Marner and Matthews so far this year is that there were nights off. One of them would take a night off, it felt like, every 3 games in past years. And there are very few nights off for those two who have become – not an equivalent, I guess, say to McDavid Dreisaitl, but a 1-2 punch that's sort of on that level right now. And the D is just like all the little things that they did, which Leaf fans have been kind of crying out to Kyle Dubas to do over the past few years, to get a little bit tougher and deeper on D. And all those things have worked out. Like Wayne Simmonds, before he got hurt, was playing great. He was like the Wayne Simmonds of 4 years ago in Philadelphia. And TJ Brody's been good. And Justin Hall has emerged as a top 4 defenseman kind of out of nowhere. And I think when you're going to have a step up like that, that's what you need, right? You need guys that aren't expected to do something great. And when that happens, and you can, in an age when top 4 defensemen are so hard to find, and you guys know Winnipeg probably as much as any other market in that division over the last couple of years, having a guy like that just emerge is really something. So, yeah, they're good, but you know, if they go to the first round, let's say Toronto wins the division and plays Calgary. Calgary's a little bit of an enigma right now, but, and Markstrom stands on his head or something again. I just think that Toronto's season is irrelevant until they, you know, until they win the two rounds and get out, if that's what they're able to do. I just don't think that you have to be very guarded in your praise of the Leafs until you see what they do in the playoffs. And I think they all know that too, right? Matthews and Marner and Tavares, they all know that they're only going to be judged on what happens when they get to the top four in the North come playoff time.
James, I liked your description that the rest of the league is like the KHL, because I'm like with you. I have absolutely no, I might know more about what's going to the KHL if there's a Jets prospect than I have with the American teams right now. But, you know, to that, in that vein, I mean, we see how popular it seems to be with the Canadian division. Now, we know that in all likelihood, if everything goes well and the world gets back to somewhat normality next year, it won't be this way. But do you see the NHL tweaking their schedule to make it so there's more times, like instead of Winnipeg playing Toronto once and Winnipeg once in each city and Montreal once in each city, that we see more series between these Canadian teams?
Yeah, I think a couple things. I think it's possible you could see a Canadian division going forward, though I don't know how much you guys have talked about it. The logistics of it would be challenging from a travel standpoint. When you have to go back to, and I don't mean a Canadian division where they only play each other, obviously, a Canadian division in a normal schedule. So let's say, as you say, we have a normal sched next year. Could the Canadian division exist? Because the travel now suddenly changes. I know they've said the Canadian division's really good travel-wise this year because these 2- and 3-game series they're playing, and they don't have to cross the border or anything like that. So could it exist when you're also have to travel, if you're the Jets, when you also have to travel, you know, down to Florida or whatever, if you're the Leafs and you also have to go to California, can you still go west twice or three times? And can the Jets come east, you know, three times a season? Maybe if you play those, if those back-to-back games remain part of it, these little 2-game series, which I don't know if I love yet. I'm not sure. Like, it, you know, when you're hosting a show, I've done a couple, you don't see me too much on the Jets games, except in the intermissions, but let's say I'll do Sens back-to-back against the Oilers. And by the second night, I'm like, all right, here we go again. It's McDavid and Dreisaitl. And so it gets a little hard to sell the same thing over and over and over again. I kind of prefer where you don't see somebody and then you see him again in a couple of months, but it probably won't happen. The Canadian division next year, Bettman probably likes it the way it is, and we'll probably go back to that. I would kind of like to see it, as long as it wasn't crazy travel on all the Canadian teams. And I'd have to have somebody do the math to that for me. And that's really not answering your questions. Tweaking the sched like this, yeah, I'd like to. It would be great if you could see, you know, if Scheifele and company could come to Toronto twice instead of once a season. Right. And vice versa. You get the Leafs out there or the Habs out there a couple of times a year, I think would be something they should definitely look at. And they'll have to, if the success of this, if by the end of the year, we're not sick of all these matchups because they've played 8 or 10 times, then I think that's something the NHL will have to look at, but they're probably not right now. They're probably just thinking, let's frigging have a full season starting in October and let's not mess with anything too much, I think. And we all feel the same way.
We certainly do want to return to a sense of normalcy. James Duffy is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel for the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose video. And you can also, of course, subscribe to our podcast. Get the show sent to your device automatically each and every Saturday. You know, James, I look at the Vancouver Canucks, and I don't think there's a market that's quite as apoplectic as Vancouver is right now, given the way their team has started. Is it almost that the worst thing that ever that happened to them was their success in the bubble, given it created what seems to be unrealistic expectations for this season?
That's a really good question, Drew, and I'm not sure. I thought they would be better. I did not think they'd fall off like this, because A, we all have recency bias, and I thought what I saw from the core of that team in the bubble was something that even though I know all the pieces around matter, and that's often the difference between a championship and a team that goes out in the first round. But the core is everything, and the core really didn't change that much. And I thought they looked so good that they'd be okay, that maybe they wouldn't win the division, but they'd be there third or something like that, or fourth. And to see it fall apart like this is really something. And Jim Benning, I mean, you know, you guys know what that market's like, and there's just the anger right now is something that, you know, it gets to a point where you almost have to do something, I think, if your ownership, if they don't turn it around. But a couple of things, I think they made a couple of big mistakes. Toffoli was a mistake. They had the money to sign Tyler Toffoli, and it looked like he fit right in there. And I just don't understand the thinking of, you acquire a guy, he fits right in, he's a huge contributor for you down the stretch and in the playoffs, and you have the money to re-sign him, and that's an area of need, and you don't. And I just, that I don't get. And it's, you know, accentuated by what he's doing in Montreal to start the season. You know, Markstrom, that's a tough one, to spend that much money on a goalie. Would have liked to have kept him, but Demko was so good in the playoffs last year. So I can sort of understand that, but little things like that. And then you have a Quinn Hughes, who's a superstar, but has been awful defensively. Like, he's one of these guys who hasn't figured out that side of the game yet. He's probably the second or third best offensive defenseman in the league. I mean, Cale Makar is better. I'm trying to think of another right now. But defensively, I think he's worse in the league, and plus minus maybe, and just on for just even strength goal after even strength goal. So those two things, a couple of mistakes by Benning in the offseason, a step back by a guy who's a young star, and Pettersson having such a slow start, I think have contributed to the fact that they're, you know, not in Ottawa's level, but, you know, they're the second worst team in the North. And you dig a hole like that in a division like this, then it's hard to recover from. And I think that's the other thing we're going to see, guys, with all this divisional interplay, is that the one thing that we may have is big separation. And it's all great right now, but you could get a situation where, let's take the North, where if the Jets keep playing well, if Montreal keeps playing well, so Toronto, Winnipeg, Montreal, those three really separate themselves from the pack. And maybe there's a battle for fourth between Edmonton and Calgary, or maybe Edmonton runs away too. And then you could get a situation where you have a 12-point gap or something between those four teams and, say, Calgary, Vancouver, Ottawa, and it's over. And there's no playoff race. And if you look through the divisions, there's a few divisions like that that have massive separation between the top few teams and the bottom few teams. And so it might kill the playoff races this year if we're, you know, hopefully there'll be at least a race for the last spot in each division, but you could have a situation where we get to, you know, the middle of April or whatever, and most of the playoff races are over. And I think that would be the one negative out of all this, whether you like the wild cards or not. It usually leads to the last weekend or so being crazy for a couple of spots. And that might be the one thing about this divisional play, is that you get races that are over early.
James, I wanted to ask you about the Alberta teams, because I agree with you in Vancouver. I think you're really seeing them missing Tyler Toffoli. And, you know, this was pointed out by Ray Ferraro on Overdrive a couple of days ago, that, you know, Chris Tanev, I think, was a player that I think many people, myself included, we underestimated, you know, what his loss was going to mean. And he's been so good with Noah Hanifin there in Calgary. Right. When you look at the Oilers and the Flames, obviously we've got, you know, a lot of season to play, not as much as maybe we're used to, but, you know, when you look at the Flames or Oilers, which of those two teams, you know, do you think has it more together at this point in the season? Because you look at the Flames and they're, you know, having trouble scoring goals. You know, if Tkachuk, Monahan, Goudreau and Lindholm aren't putting the puck in the net, you know, they're having some difficulty. And then you look at the Oilers and, you know, on defense, you know, it's a work in progress. So when you look at those two teams, do you give the edge to the Oilers just because of McDavid and Draisaitl? And do you still think there's enough season that, you know, teams like Calgary and Vancouver are, you know, going to be able to figure it out?
That's a great question. And I think that might end up being the question of this division is that, because I really do think that Winnipeg and Toronto or Montreal are good enough that they're going to be playoff teams, barring some sort of crazy injuries. Calgary to me is the most enigmatic team in the division because I do think they are a more complete team than the Oilers. And so I would say right now, if they were to meet in a playoff series, that I would probably.
I think James may have frozen. Yeah. Looks like, well, let's see if we can get the connection back up. It looks like James has frozen momentarily, but we'll see if we can work through our technological difficulties. It happens on radio also. Happens on YouTube. It happens on radio.
Take so the Flames. There I just you go. Think there's a little more grit on the Flames. I'll just smile and look pretty. You guys tell me when I'm back. You're all frozen on me.
You're always looking pretty, James.
Go for it, James. I think you're back.
No, I think he's frozen still.
No, still frozen.
James was back there for a second, but
nope. No, we lost him.
No, we lost him.
All righty. Well, we appreciate James joining us. I mean, we'll see if he's able to come back on with us momentarily. But, that's what you get when you live stream sometimes. It is, you never know what's going to happen. You know, we were talking about Vancouver there. I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, boy, I mean, you know, Ottawa didn't really have any hope this year. Nobody's really surprised that Ottawa's been struggling in the manner that they have. But when Vancouver lost on Thursday night to Calgary, I mean, they've lost six in a row. Yeah. And I believe they've lost a clean six in a row, which is hard to do at any point in time in the NHL. So right now, you know that temperature in Vancouver is through the roof. Well,
and they've played more games than any other team in the league, right, Drew? So,
yeah.
I mean, they're falling behind in points, but they're all also falling behind in games played, right? Like when you have teams that have three or four games in hand on you, I mean, you know, that really starts to become a problem in April, right? So I agree with you. I mean, that was a bad loss to the Calgary Flames, and there's no way to say it aside from they're struggling. And we got James back now, though.
Yeah, there you go. I think we got James back. You're moving to a different device from the previous one, right?
Yeah, sorry. You have
to switch cameras.
Do you want me to turn this sideways? Does it matter?
Doesn't matter.
I have the worst Wi-Fi in the world in my house. I live in a town called Aurora, north of Toronto. And it's 2021 and I work for a large telecom company and my Wi-Fi is the worst to the point where I had to get a landline reinstalled in my house to do radio interviews because my cell phone goes down so often. And so we were rolling along nicely there and I've changed to my phone and put it on data. So hopefully it will work. I don't know. I was on such a brilliant soliloquy. It was some of my finest work too. Where did you lose me at?
You know, and to play nice, James, I won't ask you who your Wi-Fi provider is because I don't want to put anybody into an awkward position or anything right now. You were talking about the Alberta teams, and I think Dave actually has a question for you about the trade deadline upcoming, if I'm not mistaken, right, Dave?
Right. Where did I get cut off on the Alberta teams? And I'll finish my thought, really, is that I said Calgary was really enigmatic. Yeah. And I just think if they were to play in a playoff series, I'd take Calgary. I think they're a more complete team. I think the goaltending's better, a little more grit, guys like Tkachuk and et cetera. But if you get off to a start like this, like if the Oilers get 8 points ahead of them or something, it begins to be a hard mountain to climb, especially when you get the Senators so often on your schedule. And if the Canucks are bad, those are a lot of victories for teams who get ahead, right? So I'd like Calgary, I guess, is the answer to my question, but barely over Edmonton.
You know, James, one of the favorite parts of Trade Center, usually we're watching it inside the Bell MTS Place, watching your broadcast. And, you know, sometimes when things aren't happening, you're having some fun with your co-host. What do you think it's going to be like this year, though? Because we saw with the Patrick Laine trade to Columbus, what's happened, what the reality is for Canadian teams trading with an American team. You know, the weight, Pierre-Luc Dubois just played his first game for the Jets this last week. Patrick Laine, Jack Roslovic already playing games, number of games for the Columbus Blue Jackets. So there's obviously a disparity there between those types of, you know, the Canadian teams trading with the American teams that's never existed before. So do you think that's going to have a big impact on a day like Trade Center Day where Canadian teams may have to have some foresight and think, well, we can't wait till April 12th because we need to have these trades done well in advance. Again, assuming that everything continues on the way it is.
Yeah, I think David's going to screw us probably for, and I just, when I say us, I just mean very selfishly us doing that TV show. Because you're right. And unless things, if, you know, if we were all getting vaccine shot in our arm right now and players were, and things were looking way better, then I could possibly say that by what's the date, April 13th or whatever trade deadline is, that
April 12th.
Yeah, we'd be in better shape, but I don't think we're going to be in significantly better shape. And so the government will likely have the same sort of restrictions. And I think you're bang on that. If you really want a guy for the stretch run, the full stretch run, you're going to have to make a move before that. If you trade for a guy on April 12th and from an American team, and he's got to come up and sit for 14 days, now there's 2 weeks left in the season or whatever. It just doesn't make any mathematical sense to me. So I think you're more likely to have a deadline period. And perhaps you're also more likely to have less movement in general, just because maybe general managers are going to take this as a bit of a one-off season and not make as harsh judgments. You know, there'll still be the tweaking. There's always trades around trade deadline, but there may not be any, you know, the big moves that we've seen in some years, not enough years, simply because, you know, perhaps they're going to say, this is just a strange, weird season. I'm not going to make a gigantic, trade my number one defenseman or something for two first rounders. And I may not do that this year. So I'm a little worried about it, frankly. It also happens, trade deadline, all the schedule also messed me up because it's the Monday after the Masters. And the Masters is part of my gig as well. And so haven't quite figured that one out. If I am going to be able to go to the Masters, somehow find my way back on a red eye or something and get there for trade deadline, or if I won't be able to go to the Masters and we'll have to do it from Toronto, which would cut a deep hole in my soul, because as much as I love hockey, I really love covering the Masters. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year. So yeah, this thing has already messed up the entire spring schedule for me.
I think there's something to be said about trade deadline from Amen Corner, because you know a lot of those teams are throwing Hail Marys at that point in time.
I was trying to push for that, but I don't think my bosses were buying it.
I don't think the bosses at Augusta National are buying it either, unfortunately.
Yeah, good point by you.
James Duffy. James, we appreciate it. As I mentioned off the top, you know, we appreciate you reaching out to us earlier this week. We appreciate you jumping on with us. We'll let you get back to your Saturday, I guess, almost afternoon activities, and we'll chat again real soon. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Dave, Ezzy, Drew, like I said, I'm sorry about what happened this week, and I'm glad that the show continues this quickly. I hope your entire following that you had on TSN Radio follows you to here and wherever you go, and I wish you guys the best.
Thanks so much, James.
Appreciate that.
Okay, take it easy.
Have a great week. Okay.
There goes James Duffy. We always appreciate James joining us on the program. And again, I mentioned it before, if you missed any of that, if you missed any of the show, you can subscribe to us. Our podcast is still going to be available, just like you always used to do. All the information is available on illegalcurve.com. You can check our Twitter feed at illegalcurve for details on how to subscribe. And while you're at it, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Smash that like button. Is that the phrase I'm supposed to say? So be sure to do that so you don't miss a minute here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeff O'Neill. Sorry, Dave. Go ahead. Yeah.
So say like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Pardon me. I'm not up to date on my lingo, but I'll obviously have to work on that. Jeff O'Neill is going to join us in a few minutes, so we're looking forward to that. Let's take a big deep breath. Let me do a read. We'll be back in a second with more information here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets and for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Rumors is open tonight. They are taking all the necessary precautions to keep you safe in this pandemic time period. Very limited capacity, very few tickets available. Everybody is spaced out appropriately. Gather a member of your household, household members only, of course. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for something to do on Valentine's Day tomorrow night, it's a special Sunday show at Rumors as well. Be sure to get your tickets. They're almost all gone, if they're not all gone already. rumorscomedyclub.com. Don't miss a minute.
Now, speaking of Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Drew, is your dad going to pop in behind you there and bring you lunch pretty soon, or are we? When are we going to see him again?
I don't know if there's any lunch. I could use a coffee refill. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not, but you know, he's in the other room, and I can hear him listening to the YouTube show. So I'm hearing both you guys live and the show on delay behind me. So it's always a little bit of an interesting phenomenon, what's going on here, but it's all good. We're plugging through. We've been on for 2 hours straight. Who needs commercials? We don't need commercials. We don't need no stinking commercials. Anyways, I'll pass out after the show's over. That's okay. I don't need any oxygen in my lungs either. Jeff O'Neill, like I mentioned, going to join us momentarily. Let me ask you guys this. It's a big week for the Jets coming up. You know, obviously starting this afternoon, you have the game against the Senators where you want to take care of business. And then you got three games this week. You head out west, the Monday and the Wednesday against the Edmonton Oilers and the Friday against a very struggling Vancouver Canucks team. From my perspective, you know, if you're worried about how you match up against the Leafs and the Habs, it's these games against the teams that are right around you or below you in the standings that you certainly need to continue to make some hay, especially like you've done against the Ottawa Senators so far. I think as he was frozen.
No, I mean, obviously, Drew, you have to pick up these wins and you have to do well against the teams that are below you. I mean, it's cliche to say, but it's true. I mean, the whole point, and we talk about it, at the end of the day, you know, it's points in the standings bank. And you want the team to be playing, I think you need to mute Ezzy because there's an echo. But the point is that these are the things you have to do. You just can't afford, you know, like that last second loss to the Oilers, you know, the late loss to the Flames, they're bad. You just can't afford to continue to do them, because what we've talked about, or what's been alluded by Paul Maurice and people who are focused on this team, is look at the schedule in March and April. I think they play like 17 games against Montreal and Toronto between, you know, so the point is you're going to have a heavy schedule coming up. You're going to have some big battles coming up where you're going to have to show what this team is worth. Now, the truth is, I think that's better for the Jets because I think they'll be able to get up for those games, and we'll see what they are able to do. But two, I think it will give a player like Pierre-Luc Dubois, it'll give Paul Stastny, a player who's played center pretty much his entire career, an opportunity to play on the wing a little bit. So I think from that perspective, it's kind of good the way this Jets schedule set itself up. But again, you can't afford to lose these games. And again, especially in regulation, that is the key. I mean, you can get into extra time and lose in a shootout, lose in overtime, but losing clean is just a killer, especially early on, because this is where you're trying to build up your reserves. So when you have to play Montreal and Toronto 17 times, you've already got a little bit of a cushion in the standings.
Well, to your point there, Dave, if you really consider it, I mean, the Jets have lost two games in regulation where, you know, with another 90 seconds, they would have at least earned 1 point. The game against Edmonton, of course, where Edmonton scores with 7 seconds to go, or however, you know, the basically negligible amount of time left on the clock in regulation that cost the Jets a point there. And then the game on Tuesday night, where admittedly the Jets really did seem to be hanging on for dear life, but the late power play for the Flames hurts the Jets, and the Flames capitalize with the clean 2 points. It's more important than ever, especially given it how it looks like it's going to be so tight in the Canadian division between the Jets and the Flames and the Oilers, assuming Montreal and Toronto continue to perform at the upward trajectory, although Montreal's struggling as of late. It's so important to at least get those quote-unquote loser points that the Jets have so far missed out on, two very key loser points so far this season, Ezzy.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm unfrozen now, thankfully, but, you know, Dave's right, and you're right, Drew. I mean, you know, there are some points that have been left on the board, no doubt, but, you know, the Jets have thankfully taken care of those games against the Ottawa Senators, which have, you know, been half of their wins. But, you know, I think, you know, this stretch, not only is it important because, you know, the games are on the road, and you're going to, let's be honest, you're facing more desperate teams. And now the Jets will always say that, you know, they're going to play just as desperately as the other team. But especially when you're talking about Vancouver, who have played, four more games, at least three more games than the Jets, and they've fallen behind. you know that they're going to be at home. They're going to be hungry. They know that the Jets are ahead of them in the standings. Whenever a team is chasing you, especially early on, you know, they're going to be hungry and, you know, it's a good offensive team. I realized that, you know, we were talking to James Duffy about how the Canucks miss a guy like Tyler Toffoli. But when you've got, you know, the likes of Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser, you know, JT Miller, Nils Höglander is a young player that I really like. We know what Quinn Hughes can do on the back end. So there's no shortage of firepower on that Vancouver team. It's really, you know, what's being exposed similar to what's happening in Edmonton is, you know, they're just not very good defensively. It's a work in progress. You know, Braden Holtby, I don't know if you guys saw, like he was, you know, openly calling out his teammates. He's been very frustrated there. And when you see that early on, you know, it's definitely not promising when you're at this point in the season and there's, you know, some finger pointing, you know, happening there in Vancouver. So this next stretch, you know, we talked about this with Huss going back, you know, what was it, you know, over an hour now. It's not like you have any back-to-backs. You've got, you know, day off between all these games after this afternoon's game against the Ottawa Senators. So you look at these next five games, and I think the Jets could easily win four of these five games, even though you're going up against, you know, the big dogs in Edmonton. And Edmonton's always dangerous, especially when those guys are, you know, putting up a couple points each a night. It's definitely an important part of the schedule, which the entire season is going to be important because we've already played. It's unbelievable, but we're a quarter of the way through the season already, guys, right? So, you know, I want to see the Jets improve at even strength. I think, you know, you've seen, you know, spurts. I think, you know, the last two games at home against the Calgary Flames were arguably the Jets. Oh, Sheldon Mandel is now entering the room. So Drew's officially getting his coffee refill. It's nice
getting
to
my
see.
Coffee refill. Father is, for whatever reason, he's behind. He's you know, he's minutes and minutes behind the live broadcast. So he just heard my request for more coffee. And look how quickly. That's good service. You don't get customer service just like that. I'll tell you what, we've been broadcasting from Dave's house for the last number of months. And every time I ask for coffee at Dave's house, he looks at me like I've gone cross-eyed. Yeah. Dave Manuk, not a coffee drinker. I'm not sure how you function in the world day-to-day without coffee there, Dave. But, you know, good for you, I suppose, in that sense. Just a quick update from the waiver wire, a little bit of relevant news from the Edmonton Oilers perspective. James Neal, not so much the real deal. He's put on waivers by the Edmonton Oilers. Time will tell if anybody picks up that hefty salary. I would imagine that he will clear waivers. I don't see anybody jumping on that salary, but James Neal placed on waivers by the Edmonton Oilers when the waiver report came out about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. And I believe James Neal has only been in 9 games so far this year. So, you know, he's found himself a healthy scratch and he's obviously, you know, he's been declining, you know, for more than a year now. But I think I would be surprised if somebody picks him up on waivers, just considering guys, like you mentioned, Drew, his salary cap hit, but, you know, Neal is certainly a guy that, you know, looks like he might be a player on the taxi squad this year for the Oilers, but, you know, this could also just be a move being made by Kenny Holland for, you know, salary cap purposes. You know, I'd like to hear what Dave says, but I would be surprised if a team picks him up.
I would agree with that. You know, Dave, how important is, you know, this week coming up for the Jets? You're playing against, you know, you got 4 games between now and next Saturday when we'll be back on air, all against teams that are below you in the standings. I mean, the hardest of those two games you would think would be the games against the Oilers because, well, anytime you're facing McDavid and Dreisaitl, you have to sort of hold your breath with, you know, a little bit to see what those guys could potentially do to you. So, you know, how important of a week is this for the Winnipeg Jets from your perspective?
I'm more concerned about how am I going to survive this week because, you know, I've got 4 Moose games and 4 Jets games. Monday is a double header.
The Jets games the Jets games are on the road. I can handle the IC Twitter while you're at the Moose game on Monday. Don't worry about that.
I'm more concerned about all the post game responsibilities than anything like other than that. But no, I mean,
heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Hey, Sheldon's back. Sheldon is back. By the way, I have to tell your dad since he's in the room and he can hear me. Sheldon,
he can't hear you. I'm wearing headphones.
Oh, you're wearing headphones.
He's leaving. He'll hear it. Okay. He'll hear it about 5 minutes from now.
Yeah, but I will say, you're muted, Ez. But the fact is, the folks are loving when Sheldon pops in and does his cameos. So that's a good thing. But no, I mean, look, there's no question about it. You have to pick up wins. Look, you can't afford to lose today's game, especially against Ottawa's backup. So this one should be a cakewalk. in theory. I mean, again, the Jets are never going to say that. And oftentimes they get asked, you know, before they took on Ottawa on Thursday, it's, a lot of the questions were, you know, probing. What do you think about this Ottawa Senators team? Well, they're not going to give them any bulletin board material, but everybody obviously knows what Ottawa is. And they're, again, they have got some phenomenal young talent. I watched Belleville. Bell was a very good team last year in the AHL. We saw them play the Moose a number of times, and they've got some excellent young talent. And so, and we don't need to go over that because we did that in the first hour of the show. But I just think, like, this game should be 2 points easily. And I know, again, in the AHL, we see it. It's hard to win both games of a series traditionally. But again, if you're the Jets, you really can't afford to lose this game today. And then you go on the road and you I mean, this is a team that's been at home. They've been at home a lot. You know, Kyle Connor was asked about it during the week, and he said, we like being at home. You know, it's great. But they've had the advantage to being a home team quite often to start the season. Yeah. So they're going to have to go on the road, and they're going to have to make some hay on the road and defeat those teams. And I think, again, we've went through it throughout the course of the show, why both those their opponents are open for success with the Winnipeg Jets. And again, future casting, looking at the heavier season, and someone in our comments section pointed it out. They said, listen, like, strength of schedule. It's almost like artificial sweetener. The Jets have had a little bit of a buzz simply because they played Ottawa four times and because they played, you know, the Calgarys and Edmonton. So what's it going to be like when you play the Toronto and Montreal, which right now are seen as the two better teams in the North? What is that going to look like? And again, I think the advantage for the Jets, we've talked about it, is they'll have Pierre-Luc Dubois playing in a regular shift. He'll have his mojo, for lack of a better term, going, I think, when they're playing those games. So I think that'll be a real representation of what this Winnipeg Jets team is going to end up looking like.
And you know what? And you know what? Sorry, I was just going to quickly say, Drew, here, like, you know, the Jets are also going to be aided by the fact Marcus Hogberg is going to be in net this afternoon. And that's a huge mismatch in net when you're able to put out Connor Hellebuck. And, you know, that was another thing I was going to point out. You know, I think there's a good chance that you're going to see Hellebuck go on a run here with no back-to-backs coming up. I imagine Lauren Brossoit will, you know, get one of the games either against the Canucks or the Oilers. But, you know, Dave mentions Pierre-Luc Dubois on that line with Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler. And, you know, when you have a goalie in net that we know isn't exactly, you know, George Vezina, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Dubois plays this afternoon. You know, that line is going to have a little bit more success offensively. And if he doesn't play this afternoon, then, you know, you're going to get to go against a couple teams in Vancouver and Edmonton that aren't exactly top defensive teams either, especially with the Canucks, the amount of shots they give up on a nightly basis. But the Oilers aren't that far behind in terms of how they're struggling defensively. So nobody's going to be worried about Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's going to start putting some goals and assists on the board. That line's going to start clicking. And I do want to see a little bit more out of Scheifele, Ehlers, and Kopp, because even though, you know, we know that that line has had a lot of success together, the last couple games at 5-on-5, I think you'd agree, Dave, they haven't been producing as much as they would like. So yeah, when you're going up against a team that only has two wins on the season, you're expecting the Jets to pick up a win here. But those four games after, two against Vancouver, two against Edmonton, those are going to be huge games, because I don't think you want to leave that many points on the board. And, you know, if all goes according to plan, you know, with those games, you know, the Jets could find themselves in second place in the North Division because of the way Montreal has been struggling a little bit here. But it all starts with a big win this afternoon.
I would expect the Jets to come out with a much better effort this afternoon. I mean, they know that they got lucky, or that Hellebuck bailed them out on Thursday night, because they easily could have been down a couple of goals. And if you're down, once you get down to a team like Ottawa, all of a sudden they get confidence and they start to feel good about themselves. I mean, that's why the goal 8 seconds into the second period, you could just see Ottawa almost shriveled up and died at that point in time. They play such a good 20 minutes. They feel like they should be ahead. What happens? Murray misplays the dump in. Boom, it's in the back of their net. 8 seconds in, and it's almost like the game is over to some extent at that point in time. The Jets, you know, can see that. The Jets know that, look, if we come out and we're aggressive and we are the better of the two teams to start the game, particularly against a backup goaltender who has been, you know, relatively atrocious. And I know I say that now, and all of a sudden the Jets are going to get goalied this afternoon. Just, you know, that's always how it works. Hogberg. But I mean, Hogberg has been not very good. He's not been NHL caliber so far this season. You know, the Jets could be in store for, you know, a relatively easy afternoon if they start the game off properly. That's why I think, you know, and I think that's the mantra that the team is going to probably go with in the dressing room ahead of this afternoon's start. I was a little surprised that it's going to be Hellebuck and not Brossoit. We don't know that for sure, but it certainly seems more than likely that it's going to be Hellebuck. But then somebody reminded me, you know, Hellebuck himself says how much he enjoys playing and the success level he's had in those afternoon games. Dave, you're on mute just to make sure you know before you start talking.
No, I know. No, I know. And to that point, Drew, I think they want Hellebuck to continue what he did. And, you know, you want your number one goaltender to feel good. He feels good about his game that last game because he was excellent. Probably the Jets' best player in the game against the Senators. And I think that, you know, you could get Brossoit now, but the point is right now the schedule is light. So you don't, I mean, Brossoit's playing very well, but you don't need him right now. You'd rather have Hellebuck get the work in and you can have Brossoit play, you know, during the week. So to me, if your number one goaltender wants to play, which we know Connor Hellebuck always wants to play, would play every game if he could, then I think it just becomes a function of you're most likely going to see Connor Hellebuck in the net today. Even though Paul Maurice was being a little cute about it, not really wanting to confirm it officially, I would be shocked if he was the one in the net.
I would agree with you there. And you know, so where do you get Brossoit in next, Ezzy, from your perspective? You don't have any back-to-backs this coming week. You got obviously Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. You know, does Brossoit, I mean, could you foresee him getting one of the Edmonton games? You know, maybe the Monday game against Edmonton, it almost, when you have a backup goalie, maybe it focuses your team's attention to detail in the defensive zone. I know it's sort of hard to believe that I'm advocating for sitting Connor Hellebuck against the Oilers' firepower, but maybe it focuses the Jets' defense a little bit at that point in time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, if you are going to see, there we go, O-Dog has joined us. I do think that if Lauren Brossoit plays a game against the Oilers, it would probably be that first one. But let's welcome in O-Dog here.
Yeah, we'll keep talking about the Jets in a little bit, or the Jets' goaltending situation. We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jeff O'Neill. Don't worry, Jeff. If you got kids over there making noise, that's perfectly fine. Pleased that you're able to jump on with us on this Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon now in Toronto. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good. Are we going to play the what hand does the hockey player shoot, left, right? Don't you guys play that game?
That was Richie. That was Richie back in Philly at the draft when we all went out for dinner. And,
okay. I can't be stumped at that game. I know I can't be stumped at that game.
I think there may have been some libations that have been poured down the throat when that dinner took place. So, no, we'll keep it strictly with more relevant conversation than that topic.
Okay, sounds good.
You know, Jeff, obviously, we haven't had you on since the trade, the Dubois for Laine and Roslovic trade. And, you know, Dubois only played two games here in Winnipeg now after he had to quarantine. We've seen Roslovic perform very well in Columbus. Laine had that little bit of a hiccup with the assistant coach. You know, I don't want to badmouth Patrick Laine because I that's not where I'm going with this. But, you know, what did you think of that? Is, you know, how often does an interaction like that happen where a player snaps at an assistant coach and it would lead to a benching? I mean, you've been around the game for so long. You would have insight on that, you know, I certainly wouldn't have.
Well, first of all, you would think it would happen maybe 3 or 4 months into it. You didn't think it was going to happen within the first week where you're mouthing off to a coach. So for Patrick Laine's sake, I think that was somewhat disappointing to think that he's been there for a week and kind of his true colors are showing already. I found that concerning. It's like, what my initial reaction was, it's only a matter of time before he says to Columbus, I want out of Columbus too, because he doesn't get along with coaches. And as Craig Button has mentioned, guys, this isn't the first time for this type of stuff happening. This has been happening since he was in junior hockey. So this seems to be a trend and it's disappointing, and he's going to have to move on from it. But what a tough coach to start a relationship like that. Cause Torts, you know, that Torts has got it in the back of his head that this guy is going to be nothing but a problem. Hopefully for Patrick Laine, he can find some chemistry, just start scoring goals and put all of this nonsense behind him.
And O-Dog, I wanted to ask you, you know, you just met, and I'm not going to give you a hard time about the furnace, because I know the boys on the overdrive yesterday gave you a hard time about the furnace, but don't have to worry about that. But, you know, when you're talking about John Tortorella, you know, you've played for demanding coaches, you know, playing for Paul Maurice. I mean, Paul Maurice is obviously not saying he's more demanding than other coaches you've played for. But when you look at what John Tortorella has been doing, and I'm not somebody who subscribes to a conspiracy theory about, you know, Torts is doing this because he wants out of Columbus. I think that's nonsense. But, you know, do you think he's almost, you know, overusing that card of benching players? Because it's not like he's just benching anybody. He's benching his first line center in Dubois. And then Patrick Laine is, you know, your top line, you know, winger. So is he almost, do you think, you know, overdoing it with, you know, wanting to always pull out that benching card anytime, you know, he has an issue with one of his players?
I'll tell you what, he's consistent with his methods, because you would think that either the general manager, I don't know, ownership, president would be like, okay, you got to lay off the benching. You've just had a massive trade. You had a key part of our team that wanted to go somewhere else. Then the piece coming the other way has played three games and he's already being benched, but you got to give him credit. I think that, you know, Ray Ferraro was discussed that there's 200-foot players and not everybody on the same team can be 200-foot players. Patrick Laine is basically a 50-foot player, but they have a belief in Columbus where everyone's got to play the same way. And I do respect Torts for that, but it seems like he always says, I hate doing this. I don't want to bench players. I don't want to be in front of you guys talking about this stuff, but ultimately he ends up there. So there is some ego involved from John Tortorella. I like him. I think he's a good coach, but it just seems to be, you don't see other coaches around the league being in press conferences mentioning benching people. It's like, but that's his method. That's the way he does it. And that's the way he wants to get his point across. And we'll see if ultimately that happens with Laine.
You know, Jeff, one thing we're used to seeing in playoff series is them get real aggressive. You know, you're playing the same team over and over and over again. These teams start to hate each other. But just played the Flames four games straight, and we didn't see that. And I wonder, from a player's perspective, do you think that's partly because of the lack of fans really ratcheting up the level of emotion? Because, and again, I understand that the points are so critical and it's early in the season, but again, you played the same team four times in a row and it really wasn't, there wasn't that level of like Smythe Division hate that we, you know, came to use, you know, expected in the 80s. You just don't see it now. So is that a function of something you don't see or a lack of fans?
I think the fans are a massive part of it. Like, can you imagine being in a place like Montreal where the energy is ramped up right in warm up? And it almost seems like, as opposed to this situation creating unbelievable intense rivalries, I almost get the sense watching some games, and there's been stinkers throughout the North Division. I find a lot. It's like a Tuesday night and the same team's been playing three times in a row. It's almost like too much of each other and you can't gather up the energy to even hate somebody. Not that there's a lot of hatred or intensity between rivals that much anyway. It's like maybe the odd hard hit or a body check, but that's the end of it. So I think the lack of fans is a massive part of it, because you can get a sense of the intensity of a rivalry when you skate out for a warm up. There's, you know, fans, you can feel their intensity towards the buildup of it. And it's just not there for the most part.
Jeff O'Neill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube, youtube.com/IllegalCurveHockey. You can also, of course, subscribe to the podcast so you can get this show sent to your device each and every week automatically upon conclusion. You know, Jeff, the Jets on Thursday night went with a 7-defenseman, 11-forward setup. Unclear if they're going to do the same today or not, where, you know, no pregame skate given it's an afternoon contest. You know, from a forward's perspective, you know, do you enjoy an 11-7 setup because maybe you get a little bit more ice time, or is it a little awkward in not being able to sort of roll line after line and you're maybe playing with a different centerman on a shift by shift basis?
I know the only people that care about that are the defensemen, because they get out of the rhythm, because you got to fit somebody in there and guys get in their rotation. No disrespect to any defenseman on the Jets, but they don't have a Chris Pronger or a Niedermeyer or a Lidstrom back there where they need to play 30 minutes or they're not feeling good about themselves. So as far as the forwards go, I was a forward. I could care less who was back there. They could have 8D, because for the most part, I was on the top two lines. And I think that's what Winnipeg's got to find themselves trying to do. They've got some real high-end quality forwards. And I know Paul has kind of gone up and down with where Dubois is going to play, Stastny. I would try to load up the top two lines and say, our top six is better than yours, and we're going to try to outbattle you that way. And I love Lowry in a secondary position where he could dominate in almost like a third line situation. either with, I don't know how they're going to do it, but that's how I would do it up front. But as far as the forwards caring about the defenseman, you can put 8 or 9 back there. As long as you're on a top spot, you don't care what goes on back there.
So to your point there, Jeff, when the Jets don't have a Pronger or a Lidstrom on the back end, is it a miscalculation by the head coach to deploy an 11-7 like Maurice did? I mean, I don't know if you watched the Jets on Thursday night, but they made the Senators look like the 1985 Oilers in that first period. They were a complete tire fire. So is that a miscalculation on Paul Maurice's part?
I'm not going to get into calling anything Paul Maurice does a miscalculation. I've been in trouble with him enough over the years. So I'm just going to call it what it is. When you have the type of defenseman where after 2 or 3 or 4, it's basically the same type of player or basically bringing the same thing. So my philosophy is, why do you really need more of that? If it's not somebody that's bringing a definitive element to the game and it's something way different, whether it be physicality, puck moving, is there really a need to dress 7? That's my point, but I'm not going to call that a complete miscalculation by Paul.
O-Dog, wanted to ask you about the Edmonton Oilers because, I mean, we know Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, they're arguably the two best players in the league. Certainly McDavid, I think you'd agree, is the best player in the league right now. But, you know, you look at, you know, Mike Smith has come in. He's picked up a couple wins, sure, one against Ottawa, but, you know, a huge win against the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, Ken Holland and the Oilers were criticized so much for going back with, you know, Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith. But if you're Dave Tippett right now, are you not looking at your goaltending and you're saying, you know, with Mike Smith, most nights we probably have a better chance to win?
Absolutely. And it's nothing against Koskinen. He seems like a backup in the NHL to me. I don't know what your thoughts are on him, but he just seems like he could be a quality backup. And it says something when Mike Smith at his age, and he's still a quality goaltender, but for the Oilers to be relieved getting Mike Smith back, it almost feels like Carey Price is in the net for them. But it's good for them because I think he gives the team confidence that they can somehow lock things down. It's never a game of perfect, and the Oilers defensively have never been perfect. They're actually far from it. But if they do have some mishaps back there, there was nights where Koskinen just couldn't bail them out, whether it be a 2-on-1, a weak goal, or just a shot from the point. It seems like they could never get momentum back and get that one save. And you need numerous saves from your goaltender. And Koskinen, I don't know if it's the idea of his actual skill sets or just being overworked. A lot of nights he really couldn't provide that. So now they can have kind of that tandem system, and Mike Smith's going to be the main guy of that tandem.
You know, Jeff, what are your thoughts about this all-Canadian division? I mean, we talked about it without fans, but could you imagine if you had fans in the building? Again, it plays out somewhat like the AHL where you see the same team and whether they would do it that way. But it just seems like there's going to be that demand in Canada, at least, to see here in Winnipeg, to see the Leafs more than once a year in Winnipeg and Montreal more than once a year in Winnipeg. So what do you think about this? How would you do it if you had the choice to make a schedule for next season? How would you like to see the schedule as it pertains to Canadian teams?
I think you can try to have the Canadian teams playing each other a little more, but you have to understand that there's 23 or 24 other teams in the United States. So how do you make that work for those guys? Obviously, I'd love to see Toronto in Montreal more than it actually is, but can that happen? I'm not sure. Winnipeg, like all the Canadian matchups, although some of them haven't been that intense because of who knows the what reasons, whether there's too many games in the schedule or what the deal is. But can it happen and can it work with the rest of the league? I'm not sure. But I'm getting a little bit tired of it, to be honest with you. You know, it just seems like the lack of intensity and it's same team after same team. It's getting a little much for me this year, but I hope they can kind of fix it next year.
Jeff O'Neill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. You can check us our channel out, youtube.com/IllegalCurveHockey. Also, of course, the podcast edition of this will be available following the conclusion of the show. You know, Jeff, the Jets obviously acquired Pierre-Luc Dubois in the Laine and Roslovic trade. They've only had him for 2 games. But, you know, when you saw Dubois against the Leafs in the bubble, where he was a dominant player and he controlled the play and he was able to, you know, minimize the impact of the Leafs and their superstar offensive talent. You know, when a player like that becomes available, is that just almost overwhelming for a general manager to try and be able to acquire that player?
I think so. I think the one thing you're thinking is we're getting rid of Patrick Laine, who is a top end elite goal scorer. who knows what he ultimately becomes, but you're thinking, no matter what we do here, we're probably not going to get fair market value for whatever he's leaving the city worth. And I think when somebody like Dubois comes up, it basically fell in their lap. And I think they're quite confident that they're saying, we got fair value for this trade. Who knows how it's going to play out in 5 years, how you're going to look at the trade. But I think sometimes you look at, oh, we're going to get rid of a star player. We're getting two young prospects and two draft picks. And you know what? Ultimately, you get nothing out of it. And you say, man, you traded that guy for that. So I think as far as star player for star player or star up-and-coming player, I think that's as good as you can do as far as the Winnipeg Jets are concerned.
Jeff O'Neill, you know him, of course, from TSN's Overdrive. You know him from all of the TSN broadcasts. Jeff, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us, jumping on with us this morning. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again real soon. Always appreciate your support, and we won't ask you any lefty-righty questions again.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. See you later.
Take care. Thanks, O'Dog. Take care. Jeff O'Neill, our good friend from TSN in Toronto. We've been on for 2.5 hours straight. We haven't really taken a break. I'm not sure that we necessarily knew we were going to be able to do that, but here we are. It is 11:30 in the morning. Final thoughts from each of you guys. Before we do that, you know, actually, final thought from you, Ezzy, the final thought from Dave, and then I'll wrap up this broadcast.
Yeah, I'll try to make it quick, which, you know, us Ginsbergs, it's tough for us to not be long-winded, but just happy to keep the show going, boys. I mean, we talked about it on our show last weekend, which was turned out to be our last show on TSN 1290. But, you know, we've been doing the show for 12 years and, you know, super unfortunate that TSN 1290 was shut down along with, you know, TSN 1040 and TSN 1150 in Vancouver and Hamilton. But just happy that we can keep the show going. To be honest with you, I don't know what else I would do on Saturday mornings. Obviously, you know, I would be playing with my kids and, you know, maybe helping my wife out with some of the vacuuming around the house. But, you know, just happy to keep it going and, you know, looking forward to this afternoon's game and, you know, just looking forward to continuing doing the show for everybody. And we appreciate, like we mentioned, you know, a couple of hours ago at the beginning of the show, just appreciate all the support. You know, Dave, Drew, and I, we love you guys out there. We appreciate it. And, you know, we're going to keep doing the show for you guys and all of those millions of dollars that we make.
Dave,
you gotta mute Ezzy. Otherwise, we get that echo back.
Yeah, I know. We got rid of the echo, and now I can finally mute Ezzy. If only I could do this in real life.
Yeah, no, I think I'm just gonna use that word, echo what Ezzy's sentiments were. I think, you know, we're thankful for the support. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, we love to do this anyways, but you know, the smash the like, the subscribe, hit that light, the bell button. I mean, the truth is, I mean, it's crazy. Like our
not the bell button, Dave, not the bell button.
Well, maybe not the bell button, but like, they'll smash that in a different way. But like, I think what it ultimately comes down to, and it's interesting, like YouTube was not something we've ever really traditionally used. We've always been on Twitter. We've been on Instagram. Obviously our website, illegalcurve.com, has been our online presence for over a decade, as you guys have talked about. But, you know, really our YouTube, and just to see the reaction, I mean, we're at 100 before, and then I started posting the Jets Moose stuff. We picked that up, and now I think we're at like almost 2,000. I mean, it's crazy how much support we've had from people. And again, that just goes, that's reflected in the chat that's going on right now. And it's reflected on the, on that. So I just am so thankful for the support from everybody. And I really do have to say, I mean, again, it's awesome to see the community. I mean, it's one thing we do when we're doing our radio show, we would have interaction obviously on Twitter, and we would do a call-in show probably maybe three times a year, most likely usually just two times a year, but occasionally a little bit more. And you didn't have that interactivity with the audience that we do. And we're active. We have we're active on other platforms, but to see the dialogue that's going on, it's awesome. And it's a fun place. It's allowing people to have, I think, a voice. And that's what people are, and that's the kind of the overarching message I seem to be seeing, whether it's on message boards or Instagram or in the chat right now, is that people feel like their voice has been removed. And if we can provide people that opportunity to have a place for their voice, that to me is so valuable. And it's such an awesome, you know, like I said, it's amazing that I get to draw something from that. So I'm really appreciative of it. And I'm, you know what, again, I didn't know how the show was going to go, but originally when it started, I was like, oh man, we're going to do a show without breaks for a couple of hours. It's been 2.5 hours, no breaks other than Drew reading his 10 second reads. And you know what, it's flown by. So I'm looking forward to continuing. I think that, you know, we've obviously knew we've got something here with Illegal Curve, and I'm just looking forward to continuing. And also for everybody going to illegalcurve.com after the Jets game to read our good stuff.
Dave, not afraid to make the final plug for illegalcurve.com. And I'll wrap it up by echoing everything Dave said. Of course, we want to thank our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. If you know of a business that might be interested in becoming one of our exclusive sponsors, don't be afraid to reach out. You can reach us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can always email us advertise@illegalcurve.com. We want to hear from you. Drew@illegalcurve.com, Dave@illegalcurve.com, Ezra@illegalcurve.com. We do this for our fans, and we appreciate all of you that have joined us for the last two and a half plus hours. It is truly overwhelming. We thank you so much for doing it. We'll be back next Saturday. We're going to do this again next Saturday. Be sure to keep it tuned to illegalcurve.com. Hit the subscribe button, smash the like button, subscribe to the podcast. We'll have that up for you just as soon as possible. Thank you so much to everybody who joined us on YouTube, to James Duffy, Jeff O'Neill, to Hustler. We love you all. That's it. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on YouTube.com.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk.